Running an online business is hard enough without the stress and time consumption of managing hosting. Whether managing one WordPress site or dozens, Kinsta's managed solutions offer speed, enterprise-grade security, and an intuitive dashboard. With 24/7, 365 human-only expert support, get peace of mind that your sites stay online, secure, and performing their best. Start today and get your first month free with migrations handled for you. Learn more at kinsta.com/podcast. That's kinsta.com/podcast.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Gravity Podcast, where we host conversations on developing a Christian spirituality rooted in love that fosters resilient faith in everyday life.
Amazing. I don't think you've told anybody else but us that Ariana Grande is your hero, Ben. Have you? Well, welcome to the Gravity Commons Podcast. This is Matt Tebbe, and I'm joined by Christy Pendley and Ben.
Hey.
Hey.
Ben Sternke. Hey, we have 90 seconds through this intro. Some of you have been listening for 6 years and have been waiting for a 90-second intro. This is your time.
Here it is.
Rejoice.
Hey, we talk about Theology Beer Camp in this episode, and you can check the show notes for that. Join us. It'll be in Denver October 17th, 18th, and 19th. If you use Gravity Hobbit as your code, you get $50 off registration.
That's incredible.
It's a great deal. I don't even know all the people who are there. All I know is Ilya Delio is going to be there, and I can't wait. Her book, The Unbearable Wholeness of Being. Changed my life. It is such a good book. I got to revisit it.
Yeah.
Because I really feel like I'm slacking lately. I got to kick myself in the butt a little bit. Get back
Brian
on the...
Brian McLaren is also... There's several Bryans that are going to be there. Brian Zond, Brian McLaren.
And the three of us are going to be
there.
Diana
Butler
Bass. The gang is together.
Ooh, she's great.
Bunch of other podcasters. It'll be great.
Yeah. Let's all meet up there. Register, come join us, have fun. As Josh says in this episode, it's not your typical conference. Lots of relational engagement. Speaking of Joshua.
Yeah, tell us about him.
Yeah, Josh Patterson is the founder and host of Rethinking Faith Podcast. He's an independent theologian with a love for process, relational thought, radical theology, and the mystics. When not reading or podcasting, Josh enjoys playing ice hockey and spending time with his friends and family. Let's get into it. Josh Patterson, welcome to the Gravity Commons Podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Josh, how did we meet? We meet online, you and I?
Yes, we met online, and then also you and Ben came on the podcast while ago, whenever that book you put out together came out.
Yeah, Having the Mind of Christ.
Yes.
Yeah, that podcast would be the Rethinking Faith Podcast, which Josh hosts. We're going to talk more about that in this episode here, this conversation. But first, Josh, maybe by way of introducing yourself to our audience, give us a little sketch of how you grew up, and maybe important details to include would be like, when did you start following Jesus?
Yeah. So I grew up in kind of like, I don't know, at first kind of a Christmas and Easter kind of family, Creasters, as they've been affectionately called.
Yeah.
And that lasted all until about, you know, maybe fifth grade when my parents went to this thing called the Walk to Emmaus, which
I know what that is.
I
know that too.
So once they did that, we started going to church every Sunday. We were at a Methodist church at the time and did that all the way up until around my middle school age, when my parents discovered the wonders of early 2000s CCM, you know, contemporary Christian music.
Audio and journal.
The Southern Baptist Church up the road, they played that kind of stuff. So we started going to the Southern Baptist Church when I was in middle school. And so, yeah, heavily involved in the youth group. Somebody thought it was a good idea to give me a microphone at a very young age. So I started preaching when I was young. Yeah, and ultimately we ended up getting kicked out of that church when my brother was in seventh grade. I was in 10th grade at the time. Because my brother came out to our family as gay, and the pastor's response was, "Your family's no longer welcome here."
Whoa. Hang on, so pause. Yeah. Pause. Can I pause there, Josh? Can I just pause there for a second?
Yeah.
Are you being sarcastic?
No.
Like, is there more to it, or is that literally what happened?
That's literally what happened. Yeah, it was really ugly. Parents were texting and calling my parents saying, like, "You guys are bad parents. You're letting your kid go to hell for being gay." Kids in youth group were texting my brother saying, like, you know, "You're going to hell," all this kind of stuff. Like, it was ugly. It was not good.
Okay. I want to pause here. I know this is your brother's story, not yours, but it includes you, right? It involves you.
Mm-hmm.
How old were you when your brother came out of the closet?
I in 10th grade. So what does that make me? 15?
Yeah. And how did, okay. So y'all are Southern Baptists.
Yep.
You're listening to CCM, right? And your brother says, "I'm gay." How do you respond? How do your parents respond? What happens in your family?
Yeah, so I remember my family or my parents being like, "All right, we need to have like a family conversation." Like, sat me down at the kitchen table, my mom, my dad, and my brother, and my other brother, Justin. And they were just like, "Jordan has something that he wants to tell you guys." And they're like, "Jordan's gay." And my response was like, "Yeah, I know." Like, they were like, "What? He already told you?" Like, I was like, "No, I grew up with them. Like, what do you mean? Like, of course." And so that was kind of my response. And I became kind of instantly defensive of him. I mean, I had theological thoughts about it. But I kind of bracketed those and just was like, "This is my brother," kind of thing. And to my parents' credit, they did the same thing. Like, my other brother, Justin, also identifies as queer. And neither one of my brothers had that kind of all too common experience of having their parents turn on them or anything like that. So my parents, not super theologically minded people to begin with, but they kind of bracketed what they had been taught about LGBTQ issues. It was like, "These are my kids. So, like, you know, that's what it is." So
that's commendable.
They did
though,
a good
right?
job. Yeah.
I mean, it was all the rage back in the early aughts to reject gay children.
Yeah, it was.
You know, that was sort of trendy.
As the youth group tried to make it very clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. What, this is the early 2000s. Is that the time frame here?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, I would just say yes, that I would commend that approach as well. But I think, I mean, this is a side issue, but I think it also, though, like it feels like you would have, I don't know, it feels like as a parent, you would of course do that, you know, kind of like bracket those kind of abstract biblical theological, like, "Wait a second, you know, what does this mean?" And of course you would just like, "Well, what does my child need?" And I don't know, I guess it just like the mistreatment that a lot of gay children did experience by their own parents during that time frame. And it, you know, even now I'm sure this stuff still happens. I don't know. It just makes it all the more like just a theology that allows you to cut your heart off from your own child. You know what I mean? Like just the anguish of feeling like you have to make that choice. Like what a harmful theology that says you must make that choice. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. Dr. Leah Robinson has an amazing book called Bad Theology. And I think that severing of your heart qualifies as bad theology. So
anyway. All right, we paused there. Sorry for pausing.
We're already on rabbit trails. And right. ramps.
Woo-hoo, bunny trails.
Yeah, bunny trails.
Bunny trails, that's right.
Listener, before we hit record, we were talking about how our podcast could perhaps be named rabbit trails and rants. Yes. Anyway.
Okay.
Please
so
continue.
So yeah. The church kicks you out, and mm-hmm. it sounds like your parents, I'm just going to say, probably did about as good as you could hope for coming from a Southern Baptist church in the early aughts with a kid who says, "Mom, Dad, I'm gay."
Yeah, I think so. I have a lot of respect for my parents in that regard.
Yeah. Okay. So then you guys get kicked out of your SBC church. Mm-hmm. And what happens next?
Yeah. So we ended up bouncing around. We landed at a pretty popular kind of non-denominational church. And that was really cool. The youth group was great. I had a lot of friends there. And then ultimately my parents decided that they wanted to become members, you know, after a while of being there. And the head pastor said, "Well, you can only become members if you let us do like gay conversion therapy on your son first." Like that was the limit for membership, was no gay people. So my parents, you know, basically said, "Screw you." And we left that church. And I just remember sitting with my mom, and watching her just pull up local churches, calling them, being like, "Hey, my kid is gay. Can we come?" "Bye." "Hey, my kid is gay." "Click." "Hey, my kid is gay." And ultimately ended up in another non-denominational church that when my mom said like, "Yeah, my kid is gay," they're like, "Okay. And what's the hang up?" So we ended up going there, and that's where I went, you know, throughout college. They are not an affirming church, but they were welcoming enough. I would push them and ask them to be a bit more, but my family was welcome, and Jordan could be himself there. Yeah, so that's kind of that. But then I ended up, you know, I graduated from Messiah, now University. I have a degree in graphic design and student ministry. So I started working for Youth for Christ, because fundraising your salary right after graduating and being married is a really good idea. And I recommend it to everybody. Mm. So I did that for about a year. And then that's when I took my first job as a pastor. I worked for a church in Boca Raton, Florida. So my wife and I moved to Florida. I got hired as a teaching pastor, and my title is very long and convoluted. It was, see if I can remember it. Pastor of Growth Groups, Assimilation, and Teaching.
Gosh, it's like three jobs in one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then the children's person got fired, and I got that job as well. That place was crazy. I experienced a lot of what can rightly be called spiritual abuse that resulted in spiritual harm and trauma, things that I went to therapy for. Basically, I was working for a bunch of narcissists and experienced, you know, verbal, spiritual, emotional, borderline physical abuse at the hands of the founding pastor and my direct report boss. Was there for about 8 months, got the hell out of there, landed at a Methodist congregation where I was a youth director. And that church was great. That was the first open and affirming church I worked in, with the director of modern worship, openly gay man. One of my best friends, his name's Chad. Shout out to Chad. I was there for about a year and a half. That church provided some healing, but ultimately caused a lot of harm as well. There was not the same kind of issues, but a lot of just a really unhealthy staff culture. It kind of felt like living in a soap opera, almost like working with a bunch of high school kids, very petty kind of thing. Mm. So we ended up, I left there and came back to Maryland and became a high school and young adult pastor at a wonderful church that I will name because they're great, Seneca Creek Community Church. And I experienced a lot of healing there. I started to rebuild trust with male authority figures, which was an issue for me. So Pastor Mark at Seneca Creek is a wonderful human being. But ultimately, the damage had already been done, so to speak. And, you know, because I got like anxiety and depression and all these kind of things that came up from these experiences. And then on top of that, I'm a very theologically and philosophically minded person, and was experiencing what is now, you know, more commonly being referred to as deconstruction. And with the help of a spiritual director and my therapist, ultimately decided that stepping away from vocational ministry was mentally healthy for myself, but also I felt like I couldn't lead people in a way that was healthy at that time. I didn't want to cause the kind of, you know, existential spiritual crisis that I was going through. I didn't want to gift that to students or congregants or anything like that. So that's kind of how I made my way out.
We'll be right back.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Let's get back to the show.
So you decided full-time ministry is no longer for you. And then, and then your spiritual director and other people kind of helped you navigate that decision. Tell us what you do now.
Yeah, so I want to tell you what I used to do, because that was way more fun than what I do now. After I left being a pastor, I became a professional brewer and I made beer for 3 years.
Okay,
That was wonderful. And you know, I was trying to be like the monks, I guess. but yeah, so ultimately, brewing doesn't really pay a lot of money, surprise. And I ended up as the parish administrator at a tiny little Episcopal church called St. Peter's with Father Derek Miller, who I know y'all are familiar with.
Yeah.
And I had the pleasure of working with Derek for about a year. And I can't say enough good things about that experience. Mm. I have come to love the Episcopal church. The tradition, and I mean, St. Peter's is not quite the right language, but you'll know what I mean. Very high churchy. And I've experienced a lot of healing there. The community was great. Then ultimately, again, just for financial and stability reasons, I left St. Peter's recently, and I've been working for the state of Maryland most recently, as a hazard mitigation project officer. So I try to help local communities, local governmental and non-governmental partners get the kind of funding that they need from FEMA and other grant programs to help mitigate hazards. So like flooding, for example, what can we do to get Ellicott City, you know, where Derek's church is, the kind of funding they need to help prevent the massive floods that they have. So trying to protect life and property, that kind of stuff.
Josh, I'm curious. First of all, I just want to name and say I'm really sorry for the abuse that happened to you and the marks that it left. Like, so many of our listeners are right there with you, have experienced that. We get phone calls and emails, and I go out for coffee, and it is so painful. And so I just want to name that, because sometimes I feel like we're telling our story and then it just kind of – we just go over it, but that's super hard. And it sounds to me like there have been people of faith who have modeled to you Jesus kind of love.
Yes, I would say so.
And so can you just give me and our listeners, like, what was it about those experiences that brought greater healing to you to give some hope to those listening?
Yeah, I think so. First at Seneca Creek, everybody was just very open and understanding of mental health issues, which is not always the case, I have found, in church spaces. And so they valued that and like valued me as a person. I wasn't just an employee there, but they actually cared about me. And my direct report at the time, Pastor Jeanette, I would meet with her one-on-one every week, and I could fully be myself. Mm. I could express my angers and frustrations. I could tell her the crazy theology books that I've been reading and, you know, some of the ideas I've been kicking around that might not be great to say from stage, these kind of things. And so I think just a lot of it was acceptance. I mean, especially at St. Peter's with Derek, like I was always 100% fully myself at St. Peter's. When I interviewed, I was 100% myself. You know, like, and just having that acceptance and love and care, I mean, that does something for people.
Yeah.
Like often, you know, people think if you try to change somebody's behavior or something, you just got to like yell at them and tell them why they're wrong and all this kind of stuff. But actually, like, nah, it doesn't work that way. When you show people like unconditional love and acceptance, transformation can happen. And so I think that's probably what I would point to, is just unconditional love and acceptance from people in positions of spiritual authority. That was helpful because that hasn't always been my experience.
Yeah.
And like, you know, most of the people you didn't experience unconditional love and acceptance from preached about unconditional love and acceptance. Right.
Correct. Like,
and so there is this, I think, crisis in the life of the church where we proclaim a message that we're unable to embody. We don't know how to relate to people the way that we say God relates to us. And I think it's worth naming and celebrating cultures and systems where unconditional love and acceptance are present, you know, not perfect, but present. Because I do think it not only leads to healing, but also it kind of insulates us from like long-standing harm. Yeah.
And I think too, just that the unconditional love thing, I mean, so love is super important to me. That sounds cheesy to say. But ultimately a theology of love is what has kept me hanging out with Christians. Specifically, you know, I found the work of Dr. Thomas J. Ord, who is an open and relational thinker. And so I very much am comfortable within the open and relational, I would even push it further and say process relational traditions, because these concepts that we talk about of unconditional love, the center of open and relational theology is trying to make sense of a God who actually is love. If God is love, what does that look like? And so love is kind of the hermeneutical lens I use, I guess, for theology today. And I mean, that works for me, if that makes sense. So,
yeah, it does. And I think that's one of the reasons we started Gravity, is because we came out of systems and, you know, organizations that didn't take love seriously as the center or the primary ethic of the Christian life. And love is more than a sentiment, right? Or a feeling or an aspiration, but it actually has, it's a way of being in the world that has a logic to it. Like love has a coherent logic. So exploring that has been so redemptive, I think, for us too. And I'm happy to stand on that ground with you. maybe tell us a bit about how your podcast, Rethinking Faith, when did this emerge? And like, what part of this journey did that podcast emerge? And what kind of work are you doing in that space?
Yeah, so the podcast emerged when I was still a youth pastor in that Methodist congregation, actually. And I started it with a buddy of mine named Andy. And our initial idea, it was called Theology Doesn't Suck when it started. And so about 6 years ago. And the idea was, I'm here as an open and relational person. Andy is the opposite of that. He's like a Westminster Confession or bust, like hyper-Calvinist kind of guy. And we're like, well, we're friends. We can have meaningful conversation together across theological divides and show that this can be done. And it worked until it didn't. Ultimately, you know, the kind of conversations that I was looking to have would not be great for somebody looking to become ordained within the tradition that Andy was, you know, going towards. So he ended up leaving the show, brought on a co-host that I actually worked with in the church in Boca. He was the worship pastor. And we did like 100 some episodes together. And a lot of what that became was us processing our abuse and like kind of that experience together. So there's definitely, I call that like my cage stage deconstruction phase. Because that's definitely an angrier time in the podcast, a lot more rock throwing, finger pointing, burn the church down kind of stuff. And then that, you know, that kind of shifted. Marty ended up, you know, both of us found a lot of healing. It kind of shifted to just more like open conversations about different ways of thinking about things. Marty ended up leaving. I brought in another co-host named Greg, who has, you know, he was a part of something called Second Breath at the time. So that's really when Rethinking Faith started to take on more of a mystical and experiential element to it. I was with Greg present. And then Greg ended up leaving, and it's been just me. And a lot of what I continue to try to do today is just open up people to different ways of thinking. I am very heavily focused on process relational thought, and I'm unapologetic for that. But I don't necessitate, you know, people coming on the show, you know, fitting into that category. And just try to use it as a way to bring attention to things like racial injustice in the church and in the country, things like poor treatment of LGBTQ community. The podcast is like unapologetically open and affirming in that regard. Do a lot of like creation care kind of stuff really matters to me, climate change. So we have like a lot of those kind of conversations. And ultimately want to give some people a space to rethink their faith. They're Christian or not, you know.
Yeah. Josh, one of the things that strikes me about that description is just how comfortable you are evolving in terms of just like being on a journey. You know, rather than having this, I don't know, I guess sometimes there's this, I don't know if it's marketing pressure or what, but like there's this, I don't know, the people get penalized for changing their mind or changing the way that, you know, changing the way that things work or, you know, and so I just admire, I think, the choice that you've made to sort of work this out, you know, and sort of record it and make it available to people, you know, instead of like, oh, I got to figure something out. And then once I figure something out, like really fully 100%, then I'll start a podcast. Then I'll, you know, start to kind of like have these conversations. And I think it just cripples a lot of people from actually just exploring things, you know, and just doing things out loud. So, so anyway, I was just struck by that, your description about how it's like, okay, I went through all these phases. It's still kind of the same podcast, but really, you know, in one sense, it's not. It's a new podcast because you're growing and changing yourself.
Yeah, I think I appreciate you for naming that because, I mean, that's really important to me. You know, if I were to frame the podcast very selfishly, I would be like, yeah, I'm just trying to figure stuff out. And having a podcast means I can talk to all the people whose books I'm reading. And so like, it's kind of like a pub, like, let's go on like Josh's theological journey publicly and see what happens. Like there's an individual who gave me some of my favorite advice ever. And he told me, it was like, Josh, there's an invitation in life to go deep enough into your own story that other people can find themselves there as well. And so Rethinking Faith is me trying to live that out, trying to go deep enough into my own story. And hopefully that means other people find themselves there and it's helpful, you know?
Yeah.
And now a word from a sponsor.
Respero. Hey, we've talked about them before. They're an organization that offers faith-based counselor training. They believe that the aim of counseling is real transformation, not just symptom management or removal. Their counselor training courses equip you to help people to be great lovers of others, to understand why they do what they do, to be emotionally healthy, and to live out their identity as someone deeply loved and delighted in by God. All their training is rooted in the belief that Jesus is a source of life and that we can be a part of his work of healing and restoration.
And for pastors and ministry leaders, their training is a proven way to identify the people in your church who might be gifted for lay counseling. And it can be a powerful way to help make your church into a genuine healing community. They provide all the training and the supervision that allows your leaders to do great work and to free up pastoral staff from needing to do all the pastoral counseling in your church. If you are interested, you can go to respero.org, that's R-E-S-P-E-R-O.org, and click on the Counselor Training tab.
The Gravity Podcast is sponsored by the Gravity Formation Course, a 12-month cohort-based training in practical spiritual formation, where you'll learn to notice how God is already at work in your life so you can participate more fully in the life God shares with us. It's a discipleship process that goes beyond just gaining more knowledge and trying new practices. In the Gravity Formation Course, we go below the surface of our lives so that we can notice and name our deepest desires in God's presence. And to discern how God is at work in those desires to lead us towards holistic flourishing. More transformation, more life, more joy, more love. We've trained hundreds of people all over the world in this formation framework, and it has helped many people to have a sense of God at work in their lives, to learn how to be more at home in God's love. If you'd like to learn more, go to gravitycommons.com/formation.
All right, let's get back into our conversation.
It really does seem, Ben, like, and Christy, that's kind of what we've been doing with Gravity Podcast as well.
Yeah. There's a lot of evolution. Like, you go back and listen to our first episode. When did we start this thing?
1994.
Right. way back then. Anyway,
2019, it's been a while. 18?
Actually, I've got the editorial calendar this is up
great.
Here. It's 2018.
I was going to say, I remember listening. I listened to this podcast when I was still working at Seneca Creek. I don't know. I can't quite remember how I got turned on to it. Maybe through, were you guys connected to Jesus Collective or anything like that? I don't know. Like,
we know
somehow
some
I found you guys.
Yeah. we had Brian. Is Brian Zahn Jesus Collective? Is that right? Is he connected to that?
He might have been. Yeah.
Jesus Collective. Anyway, Brian Zahn was on our podcast early on.
Cool.
And we had him on like several times. So maybe that's
Yeah, Brian's a cool dude. He'll be at Theology Beer Camp.
He will
just
be.
Just saying.
Let's talk about that. Theology Beer Camp. Come to Colorado, friend.
Let me just say this. Josh is the reason why Ben and I are going, and Christy is coming to Theology Beer Camp. I mean, Christy has to drive like 45 minutes north, and Ben and I have to jump on a 3-hour air flight. But
we've got to.
But Josh was like, hey,
to do it.
You reached out to us about, I don't know, 6 months ago, or me, Josh, and you're like, you guys would really dig this. You should come. And I was like, okay. And you're like, let me introduce you to Trip. I was like, okay. maybe tell us how many times have you gone to Theology Beer Camp? What do you like about it other than the beer? Yeah, just get what
and the theology. I'm assuming you like the theology as well.
Right. Yeah. I love Theology Beer Camp. If I'm an evangelist for anything, it's probably process relational thinking and Theology Beer Camp. it has a special place in my heart because I was very much ready to quit doing Rethinking Faith. Excuse me, I didn't expect to get emotional about this. When I told Trip that, because I hit him up, I was like, Trip, you know, thank you so much for the support you've shown me during, you know, my podcasting experience journey, etc. I can't do it. I'm shutting it down kind of thing. Trip's immediate response was like, oh, well, that sucks. I wanted you to come to Theology Beer Camp this year and like feature your podcast. And so I did. And now Rethinking Faith is still a thing. But what I love about Theology Beer Camp is just the community aspect of it. There, you would think that everyone, and I felt this the first time I went, that everyone was going to look like me. They were going to be, you know, late 20s, you know, wear skinny jeans and drink craft beer kind of people, right? But the diversity in the room is insane. There was people there, obviously they weren't participating in alcohol consumption, but from like 17 through like 87. It is a wide range. It's a multi-generational gathering. There's people that are clergy, and there's people that are atheists, and they're together in one room. And just the amount of, again, coming back to just like love and acceptance that people are shown, and that people like me who feel like a misfit, like I don't really fit anywhere. It's just a place to belong and to ask the big questions that you're asking, and no one's going to like bat an eye. Right. It's just really cool. And so I absolutely love it. I look forward to every year, the friendships that I've made there, the people that I've met. And obviously the sessions are great. Like, you know, Trip doesn't mess around. He brings in awesome super nerds. He calls them, you know, speakers, theologians, philosophers. And it's not, there's no front to it. It's not a show. Like, you know, pick a speaker, you know, Brian McLaren, right? If you want to go hang out with Brian McLaren and have a beer with him, like, you can do that, because all speakers are required to be there the whole time. So they can't just show up and leave. And there's like not really a green room per se for them to hang out in and hide in. So it's very communal, and the speakers that come care about what they're doing and the people that are there. And so it's just, yeah, I don't know. It's,
yeah. So it sounds less like a, sounds less like a conference and more like a confab, you know, like people, people just hanging out. But then some people sort of provoke new conversations or more conversations based upon whatever they offer, and then you get to interact with them.
Exactly. Absolutely. And so, like, you can hear a talk and then walk up afterwards and be like, oh, that's really cool, you know, Andrew. Thanks for telling us about, you know, whatever, astrophysics. Can you – I don't know what this means. Can you tell me? Like, let's go for it. So kind of cool.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, the other thing that I notice about that, and by the way, listener, you may already know this because we've talked about it before, but Theology Beer Camp is in Denver, Colorado. It's October 17 through 19. And if you register using our code GravityHobbit, you'll get $50 off. It's a pretty good deal.
Yep.
Anyway, the other thing I wanted to mention, Josh, was just, you know, the fact that you got emotional through that conversation, you know, like the meaning that you're finding at Theology Beer Camp is the same kind of meaning that you've been talking about this whole time, this unconditional love, this acceptance of you, you know, even though you're like, ah, where do I fit? I don't, you know, I feel like a square peg in a round hole. But the fact that Trip and everybody else at Theology Beer Camp has been so accepting of you and of your questions, and that that whole journey, it feels like that's a, I don't know, that's like a theme for you. Like that's been really transformative for you. And that's, you know, Theology Beer Camp is sort of part of that theme for you.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And actually, I know we're pushing up on time, but can I tell a story from Theology Beer Camp last year that's meaningful to me? Yeah,
that would be great.
And I'll try not to cry. So there was...
Crying is good. Crying is good.
It's okay.
There was a musician there last year. She's actually going to be there again this year. Her name is Ivy King. And she has a line in one of her songs where she says, I'm going to curse, so forgive me. She says, that's atonement, bitch. And the point of the song...
I'll put that on my list of phrases I never thought I'd hear.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I have a t-shirt that says it. It's wonderful. But
I would like to get the t-shirt. Anyway.
The point of that song and what she's getting at is that, like, she is a queer artist who was pushed out by the church, and now she's making music about that and kind of turning it on its head, and she's like, that's atonement. And what got to me about that, and I talked to her after her performance, you know, in tears, because so Jordan, he always wanted to be a pastor. Like, when he was a little kid, that's what he said he was going to do. he's an artist. When he was like seven, the first portrait he ever painted was of Jesus. And so he's always the one that wanted to do that. And somehow I'm the one that ended up on stage with a microphone as a pastor. And he is the one that was told to like fuck off basically by the church and doesn't want anything to do with them anymore. And so seeing Ivy King on stage and hearing her sing that song with me, no longer a pastor, sitting in the audience, listening to this queer artist lead a room full of spiritual misfits and some kind of fun experience, that was atonement, bitch, for me.
Yeah.
That reversal just, I don't know, so... Yeah. That meant a lot, and Ivy's awesome, and she'll be at Beer Camp again this year, so.
Well, I hope you will introduce us to her.
Absolutely. She's fun.
Awesome. It's awesome, Josh. You know, I want to just name, you know, you talked about the church hurt and the narcissism, emotional, mm-hmm. spiritual, relational abuse. And sort of the antidote to that, or the nemesis of abuse, is acceptance. Mm-hmm. And I think part of learning how love works, and maybe one of the reasons why relational theology is so appealing to many, is that we actually have to, those of us who don't intuit this, we have to actually break it down and learn from scratch, like, how mm-hmm. do I accept somebody? Mm-hmm. What does that even, you know what I mean? Like, what does it mean to be in somebody's presence and not be trying to reject or change or control them?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, honestly, man, like, I had to learn that as an adult because I grew up and it was just normal to try to control somebody, mm-hmm. you know, subtly, you know, manipulate, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think all of our listeners who have begun to explore how love works and how great it is, would probably also benefit from being in a room full of people where no one's trying to change you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Love is hard. Like I get frustrated when people try to write off, I guess, more progressive forms of Christianity. It's like, oh, you guys are just, you just want to love. It's all about love, blah, blah, blah. It's so easy. It's like, no, love is hard. Love is like a mm-hmm. constant journey and a task that is difficult, and you have to choose intentionally in each moment. Like, yeah. Love is difficult. It is a...
Yeah, love is...
I don't know how to do it.
Yeah, love isn't easier than condemnation. Yeah.
No, it's not.
Yeah. Josh, yeah. I appreciate you, man. I appreciate you sharing your heart with us and your story. If people are interested in checking out your podcast, mm-hmm. Where can they find that?
Yeah, I mean, anywhere podcasts are found, just look up Rethinking Faith. Yeah, and I'm also on Instagram at, you know, Rethinking_faith. So I just kind of post the episodes there and that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm working on a website currently and, you know, a Substack and these kind of things. But right now, just anywhere you like listening to podcasts.
Sweet. Well, thanks for being on our podcast today, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to... hang out with you guys in a month or so.
Yeah, it'll be awesome.
It'll be fun.
Thank you.
Yep, great to chat with you. Peace.
Okay, friends, I think we need to define some terms because I wish you would have done this in the podcast, but tell me, Matt and Ben, like, how do you define, you know, process relational theology? Or process open theology?
I don't define it. I refuse to do so.
Yeah.
So helpful. Thank you.
Well, me too. So moving on. What's your next question?
You know what? We are going to have, he mentioned Thomas Ord. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have him back on our podcast. We just recorded an episode with him that you mm-hmm. haven't heard yet, listener. It's in the can. It's in the queue. Mm-hmm. But we're going to have him come back because he's sort of the most famous open and relational person. Yeah. Yeah. Theologian alive today. Yeah. But process isn't the same as open and relational.
Yeah, tell us the difference.
Well, you know
I
what?
I don't know if I know the difference. You know what? There's a blog post We could maybe put, let me put this blog post. This is a blog post from, I just looked this up on Google. I was like, open the relational. I was trying to,
Ben, will you pay attention?
Sorry. Right,
okay. Maybe just start with what is open and relational theology?
Okay. Open and relational theology in a very general 20,000 foot thing is that God is unchanging in his willingness to be changed.
Okay.
So God is open to interact. So there's like hard Calvinism is God's determined everything.
Right.
Right? Everything is laid out. Everything is determined. Open is kind of, think of it the other side of whatever coin that is, where God is unchanging in his choosing to be acted on mm-hmm. in a way that opens him up to actually giving creatures agency to make choices to do things that he wouldn't choose.
How is that different than being Arminian? Like man's free choice type thing, right?
Yes. Now we're getting lower than 20,000 feet.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this is where I will start speaking out of my behind.
Okay.
So I probably
don't
shouldn't.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
No, I it is more like Arminian theology than Calvinistic theology.
Well, it's my understanding that like open and relational is more focused on God and in his and Arminian is more focused on man's responsibility. Yeah. I don't know if that's fair.
I think that might be fair. I mean, the way that this blog post is actually really helpful. I'll probably just put this in the links, friends. So if you go to the show notes for this episode, if you are interested in reading a blog post by Thomas Ord, who's coming on the podcast where he talks mm-hmm. about what this is. But he says that open and relational thinkers believe that God gives and receives in relation to creation. So that's the relational part of it. And then the open part of it is that both God and creatures experientially move into an open future. So I would say like probably classic Arminianism, the future is closed. Like God has, God knows the future or God has determined, you know, the future. But open means that God and creatures are experientially moving into a future that has not been determined. Hmm. So they also stress then issues related to God's love and presence in the universe.
Yeah.
So. I should have just paused him in the middle of that podcast and been like, wait a minute, time out.
It would have been good to hear from him. Yeah.
Just his little two-sentence blurb. Yeah. But anyway, thank you. Thanks for engaging in that.
And we'll have Tom Ord describe. I'll make sure we ask him, what's the difference between open and relational and Arminian? And I'll make sure I ask him, what's the difference between process theology and open and relational theology?
There you go.
So that'll be a fun combo.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'll be the next time we have him on. Listener, the next time you hear from Tom is an episode we already recorded with him. But
Right.
You know what challenged me in that podcast was a quote. I actually wrote it down when I don't know who said it. I think it was him, but he said, love is a way of being and, mm-hmm. and asking the question, like, where are you kind of being invited to love today? Mm. He didn't ask that, but that's what I was thinking.
Yes.
Like, if we really believe that the way of Jesus is being love, then I feel like we have an invitation every day to, okay, God, where are you opening up my eyes to love? Anyway, I was just personally challenged in that. So,
I also appreciated his admonition that love isn't easy.
Yeah, I
so agree. When you get concrete about love, when love actually has architecture and it gets sort of like inhabitable. When you mm-hmm. actually embody love, it's not being nice.
Yeah.
And it's not being just permissive or
That's right.
letting people walk all over you or it's all good. But love actually, I think love is harder than, you know, being a narcissist.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, being a narcissist is probably exhausting in its own way, but love is harder. I appreciated that as well. You know, I mean, this is part of the reason, you know, our Matt, you're going to start one of these cohorts really soon. We have this thing called the Gravity Formation Course.
I have two spots really, left, by the way.
Two spots left. A little mm-hmm. advertisement.
12:30 p.m. on Tuesdays, Eastern Time.
Starting
the last Tuesday of September. Go, Ben.
Okay. Email Matt if you're interested. Matt mm-hmm. at gravitycommons.com. two spots left. But anyway, like learning to love is maybe like a big banner that we could put over that course. And, you know, it takes us a whole year to just kind of get people started in terms of like, what does it actually look like? And, you know, I'm right in the middle of one of these cohorts, and this is kind of what we're learning right now and what we're doing. And people are bringing, you know, their relationship with their spouse, their relationship with their kids, their relationship with their coworkers, where they do find it very challenging to learn how to actually love this person rather than get stuck in the relational ruts that are very common. You know, I think you mentioned, Matt, the, you know, controlling people, trying to manipulate people, trying to get other people to change so that I can be okay. Mm-hmm. Love is just the exact opposite. Is like, I'm okay. So how can I be free in this moment to love this person? Which is, I think, what we see Jesus doing. Anyway.
Yeah. Well,
that's probably good enough for now.
Check the link in the show notes for Theology Beer Camp registration. Join us, join Josh. Yep. Now you know him, now you know us. And come have fun.
It'll be great.
Yeah.
See you there, friends.
Oh. I have a story, Christy.
Uh-oh.
Do you want to hear a story?
Mm. No, Matt, you lie. You have a joke.
You lie.
It's a story.
Lies. Okay, tell me your story.
A duck walks into a pharmacy. He approaches the pharmacist at the counter and he says, I need some ointment for this rash on my beak. And the pharmacist replies, sorry, we don't have medicine for ducks here.
That's it?
That's it. It's just a story.
Oh.
Do you want to apologize about calling me a liar?
I apologize. I publicly apologize, Matt.
Accepted. I accept your apology, Christy. All right, listener.
Okay.
You know how hard it is to continue to try to figure out how to turn this thing inside out, this little thing that we're doing.
You do a good job.
I spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to turn this thing inside out every week. Mm-hmm. Listener, thanks for putting up with my sophomoric tomfoolery.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, please tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best advertising. Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast, and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To join discussions about the podcast and lots more, join us in the Gravity community. It's free to join, and you can connect there with other listeners to the podcast to talk about faith and spirituality and whatever else comes up. To join, go to gravitycommons.com/community. The Gravity Podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his mixing, engineering, and production work at aaronsternke.com. Finally, we would love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, you can go to gravitycommons.com/message and click the Start Recording button. You can also email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com. Catch you next time.
Check engine light on. Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, O'Reilly.